Get those search lights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Good morning. I'm Herb and welcome to Community Spotlight. This morning we have Campbell Wolfenden from Gyra. Good morning, Campbell.
Good morning, Herb.
So tell me, you're a local?
Well, I am now. Originally came to the area back in 1976. I was born in Melbourne. As all good Victorians do, we head north.
You must have been 8 or 10 years old?
Yeah, I was about 8 years old at the time.
And where did you come to around Gyra?
Black Mountain. We bought a property called Box Point on top of the Devil's Pinch.
And how long were you there?
We were there about 8 years, and then from there we moved out to another property on the western side of Gyra, out near Wandsworth.
So sheep and cattle enterprises?
Yeah, sheep and cattle mainly. We did have a Murray Grey stud in amongst all that back in the days when Murray Greys were the flavour of the year.
Where'd you go to school?
When I lived at Black Mountain, I went to Benvenue for primary, then went to the Armidale School for a couple of years, and then we moved out to the other side of Gyra, and I went to McIntyre High in Inverell.
Bit of a bus run into Inverell, 45 an hour on the bus?
Yeah, it was about 3/4 of an hour to get into Inverell at the time, so that was every day, became a drag when you were a kid.
I know what that's like. You were married in 1990, which is similar to me, and you've got a few kids.
Yes, that's correct. I actually married a local girl. We've had 3 children over that period.
Very good, very good. Now, when you came into Gyra, what did you get involved in first?
Originally, when I came in, when we were out on the farm, I was a member of the Rural Fire Service. Came to Gyra and ended up joining the State Emergency Service because I could see a lot of value just in town, and you could the community a lot more in that environment. And there's also some good training opportunities. And I did join the State Emergency Service.
And you're there for about 10 years?
Yeah, there for about 10 years.
What does Gyra State Emergency Service get involved in?
Well, the Gyra one, the main impetus of State Emergency Service is floods and storms. That's their core role. We went when the big hailstorms were on in Sydney. We actually sent crews down there, and I was on one of those crews to help the people in Sydney and tarp roofs and do whatever it needed doing in that situation.
Would there be much call for flood help in Gyra, being on top of the mountain?
We hope we never get a lot of call for flood in Gyra. What we can do is get storm damage type floods where people's houses get flooded from roofs and things, so we can tarp those. But what does happen is, like places like Gyra, if there's floods on, they'll go down and help affected areas.
So you've got the equipment to get involved with the floods, the boats and that type of stuff?
Actually, Gyra hasn't got a boat for obvious reasons. We don't need one, but we can take the vehicle down and borrow somebody else's boat when we get there.
Oh, right. Okay. So storms and floods mostly with the state emergency. Who deals with car accidents?
The Gyra Volunteer Rescue Association. They're the lead agency for that in the Gyra area.
Gyra itself, it's only a small place, but it's got a strong community.
Yeah, the community is strong in Gyra, and that's one of the reasons I actually like living in Gyra, because you can be part of the community. I think in small towns, if you become part of the community, life's a lot easier.
Well, you have a better experience, but we've probably got the similar views, the weather, the four seasons that you can get.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I definitely like the Gyra climate. I don't like the heat a lot, so Gyra suits that. And like I say, if you live in a hot climate, you've got an air conditioner. In Gyra, we've just got a big wood heater, so you sit in front of that in a cold day, if you can.
Yeah, I'm one for heavy frosts and then the beautiful sun that comes out after a frost on the New England.
Yes, for sure. And once you get that in wintertime, you're nearly guaranteed of a really nice day.
Yep, and that seasonality, we definitely know that it's winter or summer, and as you said, it's not too hot. You then went to some adult learning.
Yeah, I got involved with Gyra Adult Learning Association in amongst that time. We used to do a lot of what they call farm biz training courses. I coordinated those for a number of years, and I was helping organising training for farmers, basically, at that point in time.
Gotcha. So you've been involved with foster caring.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, in about 2004, my wife, she's a nurturer, and our kids have started to grow up a little bit. So she decided she'd go and do this foster care, and you start to come home from training and talk about it. So I thought, I better go and find out what's going on here. So I went and also did the training, back in about 2004 from memory. From there on, we got authorised as carers, back with Docs it was in the good old days. So we did a little bit of what they call respite care, which is you might get a child in for you know, a night, a weekend, a week through the school holidays. And then we got a phone call saying, oh, there's two young people that, you know, need somewhere to go. So they came up and they turned out to be long-term children. And then we got another phone call down the track and said, there's an eight-month-old sibling. So we took her on board. And then down the track a bit further, we had another phone call and said, well, there's a baby, another sibling of the group. So we finished up with a sibling group of four, which they've all aged out of care now. So I've had a little break for probably a few months, but we're just in the process of getting accredited again for respite care with another local agency.
I think a lot of foster carers start with respite, and I think it's probably a wise place to start because you're not doing that commitment 24/7, but you've actually get exposed to what foster caring's about. Some of the difficulties where, you know, the kids come from difficult situations and they have their own things going on, and you can see that firsthand, but, you know, it's for a shorter period. And then if you want to actually go further, then you can after you've had that bit of experience with respite.
Yes, and I think that's what a lot of the agencies do now. You sort of come on board as a respite carer and it sort of it tests the water, I suppose, to a point, and you can get a feel for what it's all about. I remember the first time that a child came into our house, it was an odd feeling, thinking, here's this young person that needs help, you know, and we took to it fairly quickly, obviously, and we did do quite a bit of respite, and when we had the long-term children, we also did respite for other children amongst all that as well.
So why is foster caring important?
Well, if you listen to what's going on, it appears there's more kids appear to be coming into care. And carers, they're just not about. And a lot of carers, retention is definitely a problem with carers for all sorts of reasons. So, yeah, there's definitely need out there. I know there's promotion at the moment or to get more carers in on board.
I think it's safe to say the fact is that there's more kids needing care than there's carers out there. And it is very rewarding. My wife and I have been doing it for a number of years now, and we started off with respite and emergency care and then moved into longer term care, and it is, I mean, there's some difficult parts of it, but if you looked at the bigger picture, giving a safe, secure environment for a child to grow and be healthy and then blossom because of something you've done, I think it's very important.
Yeah, look, it can be very rewarding. There's no doubt about that. And there is difficult times. There's no doubt about that either. But that, if you're with a good agency, because most foster care in New South Wales now is all through non-government organisations, so it's all agency-based. And if you've got an agency that supports when you've got problems, that makes life a lot easier.
So just on that note, you also were working with foster carers as connecting carers. What's that? What were you doing there?
So there's an organisation formed a number of years ago now that was called Connecting Carers, and they were they were the main group of advocacy for carers. So I used to support carers in all sorts of ways. And the other thing Connecting Carers did, they did a lot of training as well for carers, and that was really good.
Well, I think it's very important because the carers need support, or partly can be provided by other carers as well as the NGO. And I think the NGO model's pretty good if you've got, I mean, you've got Pathfinders, as you've mentioned, you've got Challenge, you've got a few others, I suppose, around the district.
Yeah.
But as you said before, if you've got a good NGO, they provide the support as well. We'll move away from there to the Gyra Men Shed. You've been doing that for a while.
Yeah, the Gyra Men Shed, I think it's been around for about 10 years now, from memory. And I've been involved pretty much right through the period. And we also were lucky to get some grants two or three years ago, so we've been able to upgrade the Men Shed and move it to its current position, which is now where the old courthouse used to be in Gyra, which was also the old State Emergency Services headquarters.
So how many members?
Well, there's about 15 on the books at the moment, and I was just talking to the guy in charge, the coordinator this morning. He said a couple more have joined up, so that was great.
And what do you prioritise at the Men's Shed?
Look, the Gyra Men's Shed, we do a lot of woodworking mainly. We've got a lot of equipment for that sort of stuff, and it can be, you know, we get people, they might bring an old chair in that's, you know, a family heirloom or something. We can often fix that sort of stuff up. There's not much they can't do, actually. There's all sorts of things turn up there at times, and the beauty about it, with the members, there's a broad range of skills in there, especially woodworking skills and just all sorts of skills in general. So there's not much they actually can't do.
But the Men's Shed also offers another purpose, I suppose. It brings men together, gets them busy. Maybe they're retired. And you mentioned off air about retired farmers.
Yeah, look, exactly. Look, we've had some great people come through. One retired farmer, for instance, he's just come and have a chat and stoke the fire. That was his job, and he was happy doing that. And so there's a spot for everybody in a men's shed. If you want to get your hands, get on the tools and do it, that's great. If you want to sit around and just talk and have a cup of coffee and stoke the fire, that's great as well.
Yeah, getting older men out of the house, I suppose, and more active. Do you do any exercise stuff there? Or
not as yet. Look, that's something we're looking at as a committee there, how we can then... There's organisations around that'll come and do it. I think getting the men to actually agree to it is more of a challenge.
They'd rather stoke the fire.
Exactly.
So we'll move on to bees. How long have you been involved with bees?
About 5 or 6 years ago, I went and did a beekeeper's course. A local guy called Alan Thomas. Biggest mistake I ever made, because they're very addictive, these damn bees. But it was a great course to do. I've always been interested in bees. There's not many things you can look at. If you can pull a frame of a bee frame out of a hive, and see a whole life cycle sitting there, which is from an egg just being laid right through to where a young bee hatches. You don't see that often in nature, all in one area. So I started about then, and there's a reason for support. So what happened then, a few of us got together and we formed the New England Amateur Beekeepers Association, which is auspiced by the Amateur Beekeepers Association of Australia. And so now we've got, I think, about 60 members was the last count, and they're from sort of Armidale, Yarralla, Guyra, in that area.
So you had an information day over at Bunnings just recently?
Yeah, no, we had one there on Saturday, I think it was. I couldn't make it, unfortunately. I was busy, but I was talking to one of the people last night, and it went really well, apparently. A lot of interest in bees. There are a lot of people with bees, but there's not a lot of... They can get out on their own a bit, so the idea of our organisation is to support those people through what's going on with their bees and with helping with them.
Keeping bees healthy, and we've all heard about varroa mite. So just tell me, what activities do you guys promote in terms of the varroa mite?
So at the moment, as far as we're aware in the New England area, or in our area, there's no known varroa mite existing. It is down in Bellingen, I've been told, and it's a fair bit of up and down the coast. So at this point in time, what we do is we monitor for varroa, do what they call an alcohol wash at regular intervals just to see what's going on, and if you happen to find it, then we need to report it to the DPI.
Gotcha. So it's a watch and be vigilant for the varroa mite, so that as soon as it comes into the district, if it does, then you'll be onto it.
Exactly. And what we have done in some of our, usually we meet about once a month with the Beekeeper Association. We have demonstrations, show people actually how to do the alcohol washes and that to monitor for the mite.
Now, the New England Garden Festival, you guys have got a stand there?
Yes, we have got a stand there. And once again, it's going to be an information stand. We've actually got a couple of glass-sided beehives with a few frames in, so we can do a demonstration there with the queen bee and all that, and that really creates a lot of interest. But once again, that'll be an information day. What we found from the Bunnings Day, apparently we've got a couple of new members wanting to sign up straight away, so that's good for the group.
Oh, definitely, and you can transfer the knowledge and information from the other people in the association to those new members and maybe new beekeepers, or maybe even get them started, set up with beekeeping.
Yeah, for sure. And actually, this Sunday we've got one of our meetings up at the Black Mountain Nursery from about 1:30, where we just for members and that. But it's a great information session, and it's amazing the talk that goes on and the information shared just from talking with other beekeepers.
So you're at the New England Garden Festival. You'll have a stall. So if anybody wants to go and have a look at bees and a bit of an example and talk to people about bees, keeping bees, you can catch them at the Garden Festival, New England Garden Festival.
That's the place you get a lot of information from.
Okay, so that takes us up to current times. Now, in the last 12 months, or 10 years, I suppose, you've been manager for the Guyra Rural Services. But in the last 12 months, you've bought that business.
Yeah, so I decided to purchase the business. The opportunity came up. We're moving down the regenerative agriculture path, and all the carbon, talk about carbon sequestration now and building soil carbon and all that. I supply product potentially that can be used for those purposes.
So this is all about soil health, building soil health, and carbon's the building blocks of life, I suppose. if you've got good soil carbon, does that mean you've got good soil health? Or
soil carbon's probably the key to getting your soil health going. It actually acts as like a big sponge. If you've got soil sequestered carbon, they call it, a metre or lower in the soil, it acts just like a big water sponge. And there's really good evidence now, and I've seen some sort of satellite imagery to show places where it's got good soil carbon in a dry spell, they're all green, and the neighbours are just dead brown because they've got no soil carbon in there.
So this regenerative agricultural systems, it's not about eliminating the use of chemicals 100%, but it's more about only use them strategically, is it? Or
yeah, look, for sure, you can't just go from a system where you've been reliant on, I guess, chemicals and that, and just cold turkey out of it, because you're going to get into trouble. So a lot of the stuff that I help farmers do is to transition across to potentially not I'm not saying don't use any chemicals, but they're definitely a tool in the toolbox you may need to be used, so they can transition across without falling in a big heap, basically.
So less chemicals obviously is less cost as well, and if you've got a healthier soils and you're growing your pastures on that sort of system, you're actually going to benefit in the long run, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure. Look, and there's a lot of evidence around that a lot of the chemicals actually upset your soil microbiome and all the biology in the soil. It appears that to get soil carbon down deep, it's the biology that actually does it. There's no other way you can get it down there. So you've got to look after your soil biology and promote it and nurture it. And so any decision you make to utilise an input, we look at the potential effects to the biology and what's it going to do to your system.
So talk about fertilisers. Is it about moving away from the superphosphate type fertilisers into more organic fertiliser?
Yeah, look, they're a soluble type fertiliser that can leach and lock up in your soil. Some of the organic ones they've got a different mode of action. That they can come via the biology to get into the plants rather than being sort of water soluble. So in the long term, from the evidence that's around, you're going to build a better structured and more fertile soil and more resilient soil.
And I suppose that mostly we're talking about sheep and cattle pastures and grazing up in Gorah?
Mainly at the moment, although you've got a bit of horticulture with potatoes and that, we're looking more at how to get into those sort of areas and grow good potatoes. There is one grower in Gorah that does it organically at the moment, so it is possible to do it without chemicals.
So what else do you do? You actually give advice to landowners about how to reduce their reliance on chemicals, how to build the soil carbon. Do you get into grazing species?
Well, yeah, and just recently there's a lot of work being done on what they call multi-species cover crops for actually building soil health. I've been involved in a couple of those that have gone in recently. It's really showing some good signs. So when you say multi-species, it's not about using, say, a wheat and a barley and a grass. It's about different families of plants. So you look at herbs and forbs and whatever else you can get in there, and you try to get four families. Dr. Christine Jones, who is an Armidale lady, she's just retired, unfortunately. She's done a lot of work on this stuff, and there's a lot of evidence out there that you can build soil fertility without a lot of inputs, just seeds, and they also use biostimulants on the seeds to get an epigenetics working there too.
Well, it sort of makes sense if you think about monoculture, even in the grazing enterprise, a monoculture species supporting the grazing enterprise would be nowhere near as good as if you had, you know, three or four species supporting that grazing enterprise.
Yeah, look, for sure. And look, just in agriculture it is at the moment, like just a normal perennial pasture, there'll be legumes in there, there'll be grasses in there, and they're starting to use quite a few herbs in there now. So that's just your base thing, but you can actually go and add a lot more stuff in there for not a lot of cost and get you know, three times the result potentially. Data is suggesting that you can build soil carbon just by changing management practices, and that can be changing your fertiliser inputs or grazing management. There's all sorts of things you can do, but the data's definitely in there that it can be done.
Where's the future for this enterprise? Do you see new research coming on that you're actually going to try and implement with your local graziers?
It's getting, there's a lot more uptake now, and once again it's because farmers have signed up for carbon projects and they've got to do something different. That's part of their project, what they have to do. Research is always a little bit tricky in this space because we work with in a holistic viewpoint, and it's really hard to isolate a product and stick it in a tin and say this is going to do X, Y and Z, because you put that product in a tin, it mightn't do anything because it's got all these other bits and pieces with it that we don't know about actually make it work. The thing you find, if you've got healthy soils and healthy pastures, there's evidence there you're not getting the amount of cattle diseases and problems either. So you got healthy livestock too. And then the other thing they get in is some pretty useful weight gains on some of these pastures now, which they're measuring. That you can measure a lot of things in agriculture, especially the grazing one, but I've seen a lot of evidence of that going on. Better weight gains, less diseases and, you know, all the worm burdens, that sort of stuff.
Well, it sort of goes to show you, if you've got a healthier pastures, healthier soils, healthier stock, that all works for the end product of agriculture, producing that end product for market.
And producing a product that's also nutritionally dense and good to eat for the human people, for the people that actually eat the stuff.
That's right. We might move away from the Gaia Rural Services, and I wish you all the luck in what you're doing there, but we might go back to the foster care. So you've moved back into foster care with Pathfinders, and what do you think you might do? Respite, I think you said.
Yes, we're just in the process of finalising that.
Well, that's great that you're getting back into foster care. There is going to be a bit of a drive, I think, coming up soon. We're trying to get more foster carers to come on board. So anybody that wants to give a child the opportunity to a stable home environment, love, nurturing, and get them back on the road, or keep them on the road, and so they can be valued members later in their life in our communities, is a great thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that My Forever Family, I've just noticed recently they're having a bit of a push for foster carers. I think they had a webinar on, might have been last night, just talking about it, talking to potential new foster carers.
Well, I think we might round it up there, Campbell. Thanks very much for coming into Community Spotlight. As I said, I wish you all the best with the enterprise that you've owned for the last 12 months, the Gaia Rural Services, regenerative agriculture.
It's a mouthful.
It is a bit of a mouthful, especially in the morning. Thanks again for coming in.
Okay, thanks, Herb, for inviting me.
No, that's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.